Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
The Mark Cox Shortlist. Brought to you by Eggers Heating and Air Conditioning. Call Eggers.com.
They're sending this basic trash over to the U.S. Senate.
Hunter Biden has no knowledge of the accusations against the president.
The decision that I have made for my wife and I to step back is not one I made lightly.
She's orchestrated the Church of Holy Hill.
It's actually, I think, one of those things my father's going to go down for, is letting people see through the BS of media.
Let's go do it, baby.
Let's do it.
Chiefs on three. One, two, three.
All right, let's go, Chiefs. All right. What a game yesterday,
sounds like,
huh?
You're in the locker room.
Fantastic. I know. As long as I don't use any locker room language this morning, we'll be fine, right? As long as I don't pat any police officers on the rear end, like Odell Beckham
Apparently
Jr.
Apparently that's frowned upon.
I know it is. Happy Monday morning and happy MLK Day. A lot of people with the holiday off today, and I'm sure there will be ceremonies downtown. I heard Brian Feldman's in today doing news. Heard him telling us that the St. Louis attorney, right, county attorney,
Wesley Bell
is going to be the keynote speaker, right, for the ceremonies downtown?
Yeah, that's the New Life in Christchurch. That's in O'Fallon, Illinois.
Oh, yeah, okay. All right, well, good. So lots of those celebrations going on around the area today. So we've got a lot to get to as well, because tomorrow impeachment's probably going to start. So we're going to be talking about that today. I got Jesse Jane Duff coming up a little later, and we will get Tom Ackerman. Brian, I lovingly refer to him as the Dalai Lama of St. Louis sports, because he's got the calmest demeanor of any human being I've ever known, and he's so positive all the time.
I would love to see Tom mad. Now, I don't think Tom can get mad. He's just genuinely the nicest person I've ever met.
Really,
I mean, I'm genuinely convinced he's never said a bad thing about anybody his entire life.
I'm with you on that. Yeah.
Unlike you and I. I mean, he's just really, that's the kind of impression you get.
I've never heard that saying, the Dalai Lama of professional sports, but that, honestly, that
I know,
fits.
I know.
I'm
so
both intrigued and terrified by the idea of Tom getting mad. Could you imagine?
No.
I mean.
It might be funny.
Would be funny.
I'm sure that we'll pick his brain on that one too when we get him in here. But he'll be talking about the Super Bowl and whether or not the Cardinals are still going to do any business in the off season and all of that coming up here. So he'll be in about 8:35. Stay tuned for that. It's been a day, boy. If you've ignored the last hour, I had Alex Saltzman on. Just have to tell you, Alex of the Missouri Firearms Coalition. You can go back and find that on our website, 971talk.com/Cox. We'll put a link for you up on the Facebook page, too. Once that gets posted, it's posted. I'll repost it to my Facebook page so you can get access to it. Listen to that. Alex Saltzman is on the ground in Richmond, Virginia today, where this gun rights rally is taking place. Don't buy all the media hype that the rally is something that it's not. These are red-blooded American citizens like Alex Saltzman, who've traveled there, in many cases already live there, who are pushing back against the Second Amendment infringement being voted on by the legislators in this now all-blue state. I just looked at some of the news coverage this morning in the break there at the top of the hour. They're expecting 100,000 people to descend on the Capitol building, and they're not there to cause problems. They're there to provide a show of numbers so these legislators realize how many people are upset with what they're trying to do. So please go listen to what Alex had to say about that, and we'll talk more about it a little later this hour. You can always call us at 314-241-9797. Right now, let's get to Rodney Boyd, please. Rodney Boyd joining us on the phone this morning, and thanks for giving up your holiday for us. We appreciate it.
Hey, good morning. The holiday's just off to a start. Good morning. Happy MLK Day, and go Chiefs. And as you said in the pre-segment, what a game yesterday.
Oh, man. My.
What a game.
Yeah.
you know, just when you think this young man can't get any better, and he always, you know, with these sort of slow starts and these deficit starts, it gets people a little frustrated, but he always delivers. And if he carries that through into Miami, almost 50-year of Super Bowl drought will be over. And think about this era where you got the Stanley Cup in St. Louis, potentially the Lombardi Trophy in Kansas City. Phenomenal time for our sports fans in our state.
My favorite clip that anybody put out yesterday on Twitter was the picture of Mahomes at the, I guess it was the Stanley Cup final or one of those games, wearing a Blues jersey, standing up cheering during the game.
No, absolutely. I mean, he seems like just a genuinely good young guy. I mean, think about this, Mark, 24 years old. I mean, he just turned 24 in September. He's still practically a kid, but he plays with a level of maturity that has commanded the respect across the NFL and all sports, and he is and was supportive of the Blues. So I hope that we see a lot of Blues fans and those that can wearing the Chiefs jersey, all of Missourians should, since it's our only NFL team, wearing the Chiefs jersey and rooting him on February 2nd.
Well, you know, I don't like the 49ers, and I don't like the Packers, so I really didn't care who won that game. But the interesting question now that it's going to be the 49ers in the Super Bowl versus the Chiefs is, do you think somewhere in America, sitting in a room somewhere watching the game on Super Bowl Sunday, is going to be Colin Kaepernick in his old 49ers jersey?
You know, I don't really care, but probably, but probably yes. But I mean, I think this is a good game. I mean, both these teams have overcome a lot to get there. So I think for people who like competition, even if you're not a big football fan, or people who like to see history made, I think this is going to be a great game.
Yeah,
just from all spectrums. But hopefully the whole state now that we've only, as I say, got the one team, will rally around this young guy. I think he's been a breath of fresh air for the fans in Kansas City, and certainly he's been a talent beyond expectations.
Well, talking about pre-gaming for a Super Bowl Sunday, marijuana is going to be on the ballot, it looks like, in the state of Missouri in November. Probably a recreational marijuana bill. Now we've already got the medical marijuana, right?
Well, we've got medical marijuana on the books because of the initiative petition process that we've talked about. That's where you go outside the legislature, get the signatures, put it on the ballot, and people check the box, yes or no. That passed. There are four measures that have been approved by the Secretary of State's office. And for the listeners that don't know, if you want to go through that process where you bypass the legislature, you got to first start with the Secretary of State's office by filing ballot language. There's a vetting process where they look at it. There's actually a comment period that is rarely ever utilized by citizens to comment on the language, and then it's certified. Four measures have been certified for recreational marijuana. Now, there's still the hill to climb to get the signatures that you need by some point in May to get on the November ballot, but the effort is underway. The effort is underway. And think about this. 11 states, including our neighbor to the east, have already passed recreational marijuana, not medicinal. We have medicinal in Missouri, and now there's an effort, at least four versions of language approved by Secretary Ashcroft, for our consideration if you can get the signatures to go on the ballot. So I think, and we talked about this, Mark, it's inevitable. I think it's coming. I think that for the libertarian-minded folks who think that this is no different than alcohol or other controlled substances which are legal, they're going to lean in. I think there's going to be this coalition of progressive, liberal, and libertarians, no matter what traditional conservatives might think. So I think we're heading down the path of recreational marijuana. I hope we can take a moment to slow down and reflect on where we actually might be heading, because this is a different ball game. As someone said recently, they said the marijuana of Snoop Dogg ain't the marijuana of Bob Marley. The potency is at another level, and we better make sure we understand what kind of culture we're creating if we open up this Pandora's box.
I would say, Rodney Boyd, that there's about as much chance of slowing down this train as Jeff Spicoli getting to Mr. Han's class on time, which is zero.
Yeah, and it's kind of going to be interesting to me, because I think that people don't understand two things. One, this level of the potency is high. We have an addictive culture. We are, on the one hand, fighting to create, you know, mechanisms to deal with the opioid crisis because of the over prescription of opioid drugs and the backlash that that's led to. We have more people today addicted to some kind of narcotic. Then think about this, Mark. More people today in our great nation are addicted to some narcotic than ever at any time in the history of the country. And that's probably in part why there is no slowing down the recreational marijuana train, because people are more comfortable with narcotics being normalized. But I don't think people are comfortable with the consequences that we're going to continue to face as narcotics and drugs become more normalized.
Yeah, it's a great point. I'm waiting for the two sides to have a meeting of the minds and start to argue that if we just legalize recreational marijuana, we could use the money we raised to expand Medicaid.
You know, the Medicaid expansion is, you talked about a train that's moving. It's not a fast-moving train, but it's certainly a strong-moving train. You've got most of the major hospital systems on board with it. Their interest is people coming in their doors with no insurance. They're not looking at the state budget. They're looking at their cost, their operational cost. There isn't, Mark, there isn't yet. Someone asked me this last week, you know, whether it was right to work or whether it's some pro-life issues or gun issues, there are often well-funded, organized opposition forces that begin to work against initiatives. We're not seeing that with this one. I mean, someone asked me last week, is there any formal group that is out there with resources that are creating an opposition to expanding Medicaid? And I just don't see it. I mean, there are a few national groups that have hired consultants to sort of monitor and report, but we don't see any organized at this late stage in this process of trying to expand it through initiative petition. I don't see any organization, no TV commercials, no offices opening up, none of that. So it seems that the inevitable forces that want the Medicaid expansion are going to get what they want.
Well, yeah, I'm afraid of that. I'm afraid you're right, and people need to wake up, because, you know, I pointed this out last week. This is not just, oh, we're so nice, we need to raise the or lower the threshold for people to be able to qualify for government-paid health care. And what they don't realize on the other side of that is the cost and the fact that something's going to have to be cut if that passes, or taxes are going to have to be raised.
Yeah, well, we are. I tell you this, we are not a state inclined to raise taxes.
No, we're not.
At the state level. So the cuts are probably what people are going to have to brace for. And this is something that people haven't really had to deal with. We consistently have, as certain people have said, more revenues coming in. So we haven't made the kind of significant cuts that the threats out there have sort of lent themselves to. We hear all the time about there are going to be cuts to social services, there are going to be cuts to higher education, there are going to be cuts to, and there, what happens is, it's not that we cut, we just don't increase the spending. If you expand Medicaid and there is not a source of revenue to backfill, there will have to be, in this great state of Missouri, there have to be cuts, and those cuts are going to come in those services that haven't really seen them. So we're setting ourselves up for, I think, a cataclysmic occurrence. First time ever where you're going to see somebody say, hey, we're going to have to cut the corrections budget. We're hearing complaints now about people, about the Department of Corrections is complaining about offenders being released too early. So all these conversations are going to be that much more acute, Mark, as this train moves inevitably toward what appears to be across the finish line of passage.
Very true. I hope people wake up before that happens, because that train is coming. People need to be, at least we're keeping them aware of it, Rodney, and that's kind of the point here.
You have been probably one of the most clear mediums for talking about these issues that don't seem to get a lot of attention until after they've passed on the ballot. And there's so many big issues that are getting through the initiative process, and then we're just responding to them. As you know, Clean Missouri was one, and now we're looking at Cleaner Missouri to put the issue back on the ballot because people didn't sort of wake up and really dive into those issues before.
Yeah, it's a good point. Well, thank you for bringing it to our attention. You know, I had the governor on last week after the State of the State. I watched the speech, at least the big portion of it. I didn't really hear the governor roll out anything new in terms of big spending priorities or, what did you think of what the governor had to say last week?
Look, I've seen a bunch of these speeches. I think he achieved what he needed to. For most people, this was the first time the governor used it to do two things. One, reflect on his accomplishments, because many people weren't clear, because you weren't like us, we pay attention. Many people weren't sure what had happened or what was done in his administration. So he wanted to do the recap. So he did the recap. and he got the recap done. And that's what he wanted to do. And he talked about his vision for going forward, but most of it was his recap.
Yeah, that's very true. He and I talked a little bit about that, a little bit about the refugee issue and some of the other stuff going on. One thing we didn't get into a lot was clean Missouri. Has the governor indicated whether or not he supports rolling that back, or at least the portion dealing with redistricting?
It's a good question. So this is there is a resolution passing to put this back on the ballot. So the governor has not had to formally come out and take a position. It won't go to him for his signature, Mark. If this resolution passes, which is introduced by Dan Hageman, it will put the issue back on the ballot for the voters to deal with. So he hasn't had to sort of come out. I think the governor's tendencies are he doesn't like most people who didn't like the redistricting format. But this isn't an issue that he's had to sort of get at the tip of the spear on, because this is an issue that will go back before the voters if and when, I do believe, the Senate resolution makes its way through the Senate and the House.
Yeah, very good point there. You know, one of our state representatives, now you probably haven't seen this, hate to drop it on you in the middle of the segment here, Rodney, but one of our state representatives have made a little bit of national news today. Did you know that? Ben Baker has put together something called the Parental Oversight of Public Libraries Act.
Wow.
And, it's probably one of these things that he pre-filed that may not have an ice cube's chance in hell. But what it targets is libraries in Kansas City and St. Louis have held reading time with drag queens.
Wow.
And what his bill would do would be to create an elected public board that would vote on whether or not things like that would be okay at the library. Anything that public funds would be spent on to let a drag queen come in that they think wouldn't meet, public standards, then they could vote to not allow that.
Yeah, I mean, I this is an issue that I wasn't focused on, but, you know, I'll dig into it. But I'll tell you, if nothing else, what he's probably done is raised awareness of this issue. This is, I think, clearly one of my first times ever hearing this issue happening. And so I think what the representative probably has done, and I don't know that this will get through the legislature, but he probably has raised this issue where local, because a lot of the library funding is local campaigns, local incentives, as you know, from St. Louis County to St. Louis City and beyond. So I think what he's probably done is raise this issue, and it will now become a conversation topic at a minimum, as it is on your show, for some of the local library community supporters and authorities as to whether or not this is something that they want to support or rein in. So whether he gets the legislation through or not, as you mentioned, now that this is national attention, it's going to force the local library boards and authorities to have this conversation and probably bring more attention and energy around it.
Yep, very true. Interesting that story's out this morning, certainly. Listen, Rodney, we always love having you on, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you for all your coverage, and we look forward to talking to you as the session moves on.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention that I enjoyed your interview with Nick Schroer this weekend on Insider Talk.
Yeah, Nick is emerging, a very strong emerging voice in the conservative and regional caucus, and he's somebody we got to pay attention to because I think his voice is only going to continue to grow.
Well, how could you miss him with that beard? I mean, seriously. I'm just saying.
Absolutely. He looks the part. He looks the part that he's actually carrying out in Jeff City.
Indeed. Rodney, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
Thanks. Okay.
Yeah, appreciate it. Rodney shows on Sundays here, noon to 1 on the radio station. Be sure and give it a listen. You'll appreciate that. Yeah, I'll have to admit, I didn't realize this drag queen thing until I read this story this morning. House Bill 2044 would, prevent this moving forward. But they had an event in St. Louis, for example, and another one in Kansas City that attracted 500 people to come to the library and listen to somebody dressed in drag sing stories.
And they want to shut that down?
They do.
Well,
because, quite frankly, wouldn't want my kid exposed to it unless I make that decision.
Well, but that would be your decision to bring your kid to the library.
Yeah, but what if it's just happening? I think the point is, if things like that are happening in an open space at a public library, what's to prevent my kid from walking by and looking over and going, "What's that all about, Daddy?" That's the point. Maybe that answer is to have it in a private room or something where not just anybody could see what's going on. I think maybe that's the point of the bill. We'll talk more about it coming up. 314-241-9797.
If you have IRS issues, explore all your options. But before you send money to some out-of-town company, make a smart decision and call the Lance Drury Law Firm for a free confidential appointment. Hi, this is Lance Drury with the Lance Drury Law Firm. Think about it. What would you do if you send thousands of dollars to an out-of-town company that doesn't resolve your issues, then stops returning your calls?
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
So many great things are happening. So they tune into this and they see through the media for the first time. And it's actually, I think, one of those things my father's going to go down for is letting people see through the BS of media that has been spoon-fed to America for so long that no one's really ever questioned before. And now they're questioning it and they don't buy it. And they're going to get him reelected.
Eric Trump is spot on with at least the first part of that. And I think it's indisputable that Donald Trump has changed the paradigm when it comes to media coverage of the occupant of the White House. I don't think you get around. I don't think there's any way around that. He's challenged them. He's called them names, whether you agree with it or not, and he has he's circumvented them to a degree that no one else has. Like through Twitter, for example. If he's got something to say, he says it on Twitter, and 60 million people get it on their phones, as opposed to waiting for the evening news where maybe 8 or 9 million are watching. That's changed the paradigm. And his argument that he's blown through the BS of it, that's credible. That's true. Whether you agree with what the president calls the mainstream media fake news, I don't think it's not all fake. But when you got people like Jim Acosta who show up at what used to be daily press briefings for the simple purpose of making his own name bigger, people are seeing through that now. And you've seen the pushback on the part of CNN. They're angry that they don't get to go every day and let Jim make a spectacle of himself that he can then lead his story with that night of it. So I think Eric is completely, I think he's completely spot on there. That his dad has let people see through the BS of the media. And it all starts again tomorrow because the impeachment hearings get underway. Not the hearings, the trial, let me use the right proper language, gets underway tomorrow. They'll vote on rules and then they'll move forward. And Chuck Schumer's making all kinds of noise that he's going to force votes on this and force votes on that. And, you know, technically he might be able to force a vote. That doesn't mean he can win the vote. And it fascinating this weekend to hear what Graham was saying about all of this. Go ahead to cut number 13, please.
If we call one witness, we're going to call all the witnesses. There's not going to be a process where the Democrats get their witnesses and the president gets shut out.
I thought it was funny. I've listened to Alan Dershowitz talk about this. Alan Dershowitz is the attorney who voted for Hillary Clinton. He's a law professor. Everybody knows who he is. He was even at one point apparently provided some legal representation to Jeffrey Epstein. I mean, his name's been out there for many, many years. The minute he came out and pointed out that what the Mueller report was all about and what the his legal opinion on the impeachment inquiry, the left turned on him. Didn't matter that he voted for Hillary Clinton. How could you defend this guy? Now he's on the legal team for the president. And this was his comment yesterday on his role. Cut number 20, please.
It's a common role that lawyers play to be specialized lawyers of counsel on particular constitutional issues. So, and that's what I'll be doing.
I mean, I think of it like special teams on a football team then, perhaps. You're still on the team. Very important.
That's
to
fine.
Note.
I'm Jeffrey, the kicker. I'm the kicker.
All right,
and
the
I
kicker.
Can win the I can.
You
Kick
can win the,
field
the game.
Goal that wins the game.
That's right.
Nice. Good. Didn't need any kickers yesterday, did we, Brian?
No. What was
no.
that? 35-24 and 37-20. I don't think
nothing,
so.
Nothing that close. Nothing that close. It's pretty funny because I mentioned Brian Feldman's in the studio with us today for Denise Schaefer. I mentioned earlier that I was a long-suffering Bengals fan growing up. And the other day, on the anniversary of it, I had his name right. And Jim Breach was the kicker for the Bengals. That's it. And I somehow, somebody liked a tweet by his son, and I got to see it because I don't follow his son. I didn't even know he had a son. And he said, today is like the was the 25th or 30th anniversary. My dad kicked the last field goal or made the last point in a Bengals winning playoff game. It had been that long since the Bengals had been in a playoff game and it actually won. His dad's like, and he pointed out his dad's like 62 now. So it's been that long. Speaking of kickers,
I remember when Carson Palmer, remember he was drafted by the Bengals first overall, and Boomer Esiason was talking to him like right after, and he said, "Welcome to our dysfunctional family." that was one of the funnier ones to me. And he was someone that embraced going to Cincinnati when he got drafted first overall. So what happens to Joe Burrow, then bless his heart.
Paul Brown was a legend, right? Paul Brown started the Browns, and then when he left that organization or got kicked out or sold him or whatever, he moved to Cincinnati and started the Bengals. I got to interview him one time before he died. Like, he was in his late 80s. There was a radio station in Cincinnati, WLW, and they used to run a skit in the afternoon on their afternoon show about the Bengals, about the aging, tight-fisted patriarch Mike Brown and his ne'er-do-well son Mikey Boy. Because his son took over the team when he left, when he passed away. And they've always run that thing the same way. Paul Brown's theory was he would never pay for good players. He only wanted to win through the draft. So he drafted Icky Woods. He drafted Boomer Esiason. He drafted Chris Collinsworth. He just got lucky, but all these people, Anthony Munoz, all these people that he bought, Tim Crumrie, were good enough at 2 points in the 60-year history of the Bengals to actually take them to the playoffs. And other than that, their approach has been a dismal failure.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a terrible idea to try and build through the draft, but at some point in time, you have to understand that you do have to spend money in free agency and
go buy
fill
some
holes. Now, building through free agency is not always the best avenue for success. But I think teams have proven time and time again you can't just rely on rolling the dice on a 21-year-old from USC or something like that to build your team. It's the great way to build through the future for your foundation. But if you don't build through free agency, you're not going to win too many games.
Nobody gets that dumb lucky like to have a Kurt Warner, former stock boy that you drafted for the practice team, who you can throw onto the field when Trent hurts his leg, who ends up being one of the most incredible quarterbacks in NFL history. Sure. I mean, it just doesn't happen. It's a dream.
I actually compare what organizations do from drafting professional athletes, not just football, but actually every sport, to what we were just talking about. I know this is a weird transition to like being a meteorologist. You're actually taking a lot of the information that the general public has access to. You're just looking at it in a different way, a little bit more educated. But in a way, you're making a very educated guess.
Sure.
I can watch Tim Couch at Kentucky. I can watch Joe Burrow at LSU. I can watch Cam Newton when he's at Auburn, and I can say, yeah, they're going to be a great player, and then everyone else along down the line. But at the end of the day, you're watching something maybe through a little bit more educated lens through a different type of data.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're making a guess.
Yeah, that's true.
I have no idea looking at some 18-year-old how good they're going to be when they're 25, and you don't have a magic eight ball either. So that's why they get paid quite a bit of money to be right more often than not, and if you're not, then they're going to find someone else who will.
Yeah. When I was reading that Odell Beckham story and what he did after the LSU won the national championship, that's the first time I think I've ever read how much money the man made. What did he just sign, like
Beckham
a $60 million contract?
Yeah,
or
I can't remember the exact numbers.
The amount of money is just mind-blowing for some of these
guys.
Even
more in baseball.
Yeah, true.
Mike Trout, what, half a billion?
NBA, true. Even the minimums in the NBA is almost $1 million a year. It's just unbelievable. All right, we'll get to your phone calls coming up, 314-241-9797. All right, welcome back. I will have to say, Tricia.
Yes, sir.
You were right. Mark the tape. We were talking about this with Denise last week, about the Delta jet that dumped fuel over L.A. Remember that story?
Yes.
And we got to thinking, couldn't you? Isn't somebody going to sue them for that?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Lo and behold.
Lo and behold. And I was fascinated by that story because I know for a fact that it
used to happen more often, apparently. And I was right about that. So I was right and you were right. Somebody is suing them.
Well, and we weren't arguing about it. I had never heard of this concept. So I thought it was mind-boggling to me that that could be a practice that was still in use.
So four teachers from the elementary school where 20 kids and 11 adults were out on the playground when this jet flew over it. It had taken off from L.A. It was flying to Asia somewhere, maybe Shanghai or something. It was full of fuel. It was a big plane. They had to turn around because of an emergency and come back and land. But before they could land, they had to dump some fuel because it's apparently not safe to land with a full load of fuel on these planes, mm-hmm. right? So they dumped it, and it just so happens they were flying over an area that had kids out on a playground. And they sued, stating that the pilot made a conscious decision to dump massive amounts of toxic jet fuel onto the plaintiffs. And they talked about how the students panicked, and as the teacher, she didn't know what to do, and they still don't know what the impact is going to be on their health. And anyway, these teachers have sued them.
Yeah, that does not surprise me.
No, I'm not surprised either. But here's this is the great thing about this radio show. You get so many people with so many diverse backgrounds. David texted me last week when we were talking about this. Here's what he said about fuel dumping. He said some aircraft have landing gross weight limits. And that drives the need to dump fuel in an emergency. In other words, you can't land this thing if it's above a certain weight. You can take off, but you can't land it. Mm-hmm. So they have to dump, other than throwing out passengers or luggage, the only other thing you can dump is fuel. That's kind of what you get down to. He said, and that's because of stopping ability. He said, most modern aircraft don't have that problem, and landing with a full tank of fuel is not a problem with the wings. An empty fuel tank is more dangerous because vapors ignite sooner than liquid. But he did say that when they have to do this, it's preferred that they dump above 5,000 feet so that the fuel will dissipate before it hits the ground. And the plane in L.A. was at only about 2,600 feet when it dumped this fuel. And what that tells me is whoever the attorney is on this particular lawsuit is about to make a bundle of money. And if these people have filed suit, you know there's a bunch we haven't heard about.
Yeah.
It's coming.
Yeah. It makes sense. I didn't understand or even think about the science of if you're up high enough, then it wouldn't hit the ground, which clears up a lot of confusion for me because I'd never heard of this dumping of the fuel. And I thought, how could there not be more people getting fuel dumped on them if this is a thing they have to do?
Yeah. But, yeah. So I hadn't heard that story, but anyway. Huh.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's kind of what they're doing.
Somebody's going to get rich.
Somebody is about to make a little bit of money. And not that it's probably the reason that they're suing, because it sounds like they might have a reason to be mad. But apparently this area is a very low-income area where this fuel is dumped because it's close to the airport.
Yeah.
Right? So no doubt what happened here is some smart attorney approached them and said, hey, did you get hit by that fuel? Let's take this to court.
I don't know. If I got hit by fuel, I would consider it.
Maybe.
And I'm not one for frivolous lawsuits, but if it starts raining jet fuel on me, I might take advantage of that because that is not right.
Yeah.
Especially if it's on my kid.
Oh, true. Yeah, I bet the parents are all going to sue, too. This is just this only represents four teachers at that school. You can bet each one of those little towheads that were running around, and probably their parents are suing too. All the kids, I'm sure.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Did you see this Drexel University professor that got fired finally? Mm-mm. They had to fire the dude. He applied for grant money for research,
and he spent $96,000 of it at strip clubs and sports bars.
Oh my!
And they went back and they did an audit. They did an audit on his expenses, and apparently he tried to hide the visits by itemizing the charges as catering and food, except for the fact that almost all of them took place between midnight and 2 a.m.
I tell my kids all the time when they don't do something that they should do, that was not a good choice.
You did not think this through. No. This guy's, I can't begin to pronounce his first name, but his last name is Nwemka. He's 57 years old. He was the former head of Drexel's engineering department. And he's now been charged. He was arrested last week on two charges of theft. He spent another $89,000 in research grant funds on iTunes, meals, and other unauthorized purchases.
It's got to be a very awkward confrontation with human resources when you have to go over all this.
He got away with it for a long time. Listen to this. The improper charges, a total of $185,000, took place from 2010 until 2017.
Whoa. He's just living his best life.
Something tells me they're going to change their oversight procedures at Drexel University for research grants. Wow.
I still
Holy cow.
What can't get over that.
People think they can get away with. Yeah. Well, he's looking for a job now. Coming soon to a university near you, no doubt. It's kind of how that works in the academic world. 314-241-9797. Jesse Jane Duff. Anxious to get her thoughts on what's going on down in Virginia today with that massive gun rights rally. We're also going to talk about the impeachment trial, which starts tomorrow. And at about 8:35, Tom Ackerman is going to come in here to talk Chiefs and the Super Bowl. We'll be right back.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.